This morning's page will be 1182, Colossians 1, verses 15 to 20. Five versions. It's page 1182. Right. The supremacy of Christ. He is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all creation. For by him all things were created, things in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or powers or rulers or authorities. All things were created by him and for him. He is before all things, and in him all things hold together. And he is the head of the body, the church. He is the beginning and the firstborn from among the dead, so that in everything he might have the supremacy. For God was pleased to have all his fullness dwell in him, and through him to reconcile to himself all things, whether things on earth or things in heaven, by making peace through his blood shed on the cross. Amen.
But look at this clearing. You can just see the treetops.
And you can see the skyfall now rather than just leaves.
One or two weeds got it in there though. No way, there's no gardener. It's late afternoon, so let us make camp. The gardener might wake us in the morning.
Thank you, mate. Here you go.
I think those flies are the guitar amp. It's not the gardener waking you up, is it?
That's it. Yep.
Told you there was no gardener.
Perhaps the gardener's invisible. You know, I tell you what. Let's put up a fence around and see then if the gardener can get over the fence.
Let's try that.
Okay, look. Right, we just wait then.
We didn't miss a bit, did we?
He'll never get over, if he's there, he won't get over the 8 foot, but I'm sure he's invisible, I'm sure he's a gardener.
There is no gardener.
Perhaps he's able to climb a fence undetected. and get over the barbed wire at the top we put.
Let's electrify it then.
Oh, yeah. Right.
There is no gardener.
Perhaps the gardener is able to climb the fence undetected and in some way is immune or shielded from electricity. So let's get some bloodhounds, because you know that author, H.G. Wells, in his book called The Invisible Man, he showed us that the Invisible Man could both be smelt and touched, although he couldn't be seen.
It always intrigued me that fresh food could be seen going into his body and down to his stomach and then disappear. Very strange. Let's go and get the bloodhounds.
Okie doke.
Never can control these animals, can we?
No, you can't, you can't. But they're not making a sound.
That must mean there's nothing there. No shrieks, no noises to suggest that some intruder has received an electric shock. No movements of the wire ever betray an invisible climber. The bloodhounds never even gave a cry or a howl, so there is no gardener.
There is a gardener. The gardener's invisible, intangible, insensitive to electric shock. Gardener who gives off no scent, makes no sounds. A gardener who comes secretly to look after this garden that looks so well loved.
How can you say there is a gardener? Just how does what you call an invisible, intangible, eternally elusive gardener differ from an imaginary gardener, or even from no gardener at all?
That's the problem that we have. Thank you, Chris. As 1 Corinthians, Colossians 1, verse 15 says, we have an invisible God. We have an invisible God. It says that he, Jesus, is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn of all creation. So is God invisible, imaginary, or even non-existent? Of course, with invisibility can mean he cannot be seen. But in our houses, we all have something that cannot be seen. Fortunately, it doesn't come out quite like that in our house. Electricity. And who saw the electric storm last night? Lots of flashes of lightning going over. That's electricity. That's the visible part of it. But usually, what happens is we go into a room in the evening or at night, flick the light switch, and on comes the light. Unless it's one of those, of course, that takes 3 hours to warm up and shone a light on, and then you think the electricity is working slow, but it's just the lamp. That's electricity. You can get a shock off it in the house. Remember once I had a pen pal in France, and it was a new house they were living in. The upstairs was uninhabitable, they hadn't even put dividing walls in, so we were all living downstairs, and there was a downstairs toilet, and one night I went in bare feet, of course, got out of bed, bare feet, flicked the switch, and I went, I got a slight electric shock. Went in the morning, fully clothed, not a sausage. So that night I thought, scientist, I was only 16, I went in, no shoes, no socks, flick the switch. And I said to the people who I was living with, I said, there's something wrong with your switch. And they went, no. Look, nothing came on. I said, take your shoes and socks off, in very broken French. And they put the switch and went, and they went, apparently there was a wire that was slightly out. So it was only a little one. We have an invisible God, but he cannot be seen, but his work can be seen. We see it vividly in creation. Think about a favourite place that you go to in the countryside or in another country, somewhere that's been unspoilt by the presence of human beings. And it's often a glorious sight. I do marvel at some of the things that we human beings can construct, but I'm blown away by what God created. When we were in Togo, this was one of the waterfalls, or it was a waterfall, that we saw. We had a tortuous journey there over the road, sort of like this, in the vehicle. And that was a tremendous one. Of course, this one will be instantly recognisable. Anybody recognise it? Niagara. Anybody know what this is called down at the bottom? But don't say a boat. I know it's a boat or a ship. Anybody know the name of it? Made of the Mist. This is what they give you for a mist. It is the Made of the Storm, I tell you. If you go on it, they give you a cape like that, and you need it because you get drenched if you're on the deck, as we were. But it's a good place, and it's a tremendous sight. You may have other sights in mind, memories of wonders of nature, some call this. More correct to call them the work at the hand of God. We can also see God working in people's lives. He answers a prayer. His hand intervenes in impossible situations. He's there, and we feel he's there. Is that just our imagination? But we do have feelings. And at times our feelings, our emotions almost need to come before our intellect. If we totally rely on intellect and logic, then we actually deny part of ourselves, part that God has actually made. I know for me, if I feel that something isn't quite right, but I can't identify it, I listen to my feelings, because I'm not usually a feelings type person. I'm more your logic person. But I keep asking God, why do I feel like this? Usually, he then gives me the answers to fill in the logic bit. But I've gone with the feelings first. I followed them. But as Christians, we still have a problem with this invisible God. We can't see him. Is he just imaginary? Like a child with an imaginary friend who you still have to have a place at the dinner table for. You have to talk to as if they're really there. The two explorers that we saw up here. One was a skeptic, no gardener. One was a believer. There was a gardener. But was there? It's interesting that Peter Lanneman, on the Revelation talks, he pointed out that in the book, we learn about the lion and the lamb, but it doesn't really explain to us what the lion and the lamb actually, how they come together. It never describes God. There's not a description of God. May ask the question why. I don't know. But John never gives it. We know that God has been seen. Adam and Eve, it said, then the man and the woman heard the sound of the Lord as he was walking in the garden in the cool of the day. So they hid from the Lord God among the trees in the garden. Remember, they had gone against God done something. He said, don't do that, and they had done it. But it sounds as if he had regular walks in that garden. They were talking to each other, just as we are. And you think, oh, wouldn't that be great? Wouldn't that be great if we were to walk with God? We could invite him for dinner. Well, I might not invite him for dinner. He might not like my food. If God was walking around, we could talk to him. We could listen to him. We could ask for directions in our lives. Wouldn't that be great? Actually, the answer is possibly. Some theologians are more than happy to have an invisible God, because they say God is so different from us, he has to be invisible to us, otherwise he becomes the same as us. But he is transcendent. He is very different to us. So he's invisible to us, to the universe that he created. If though God perhaps was walking around doing this miracle and that miracle, bringing down this humane regime, giving out teaching there, helping others with their direction in their lives here, would that help? Or how different would he be to the rest of us? He would look like you and me. But then we might have a discussion about what skin colour would God have? How tall would he be? How broad would he be? He would talk like us. But would that mean we'd all need to learn the one language that he spoke in? Or would he speak and we'd all hear what he said in our mother tongue simultaneously? Because he is God. And the other question, where would he live? Which place on the globe? What sort of house? To have a relationship, we might think, might be easier. But would it still be with God? This all-powerful, all-knowing, all-seeing being. Would we believe it? Would we believe it if he introduced himself? In Swansea, there was a snooker club, which I joined. And it was club night on a Friday where people just went and played snooker. And I'd been there several months. And one man turned to me and he said, Richard, what do you do for a living? I thought, this will be interesting. And so I said, oh, I'm the Baptist minister up the, you know, the Baptist church just up the road. And he went, bleep, bleep. I won't tell you what he said there, but they were rude words. And he said, you don't look like a minister. And he said, oh, excuse my language. Now, I didn't know whether to take that as an insult or a compliment. I took it as a compliment. How would we take God if he suddenly walked in and said, I'm God? We'd say, well, you don't look like God. Because we've probably all got our own picture of what God looks like. What God looks like. God has to be invisible, as we read in Colossians. Jesus is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn of all creation. That whole passage from verse 15 to verse 20 of Colossians 1 is about Jesus, God the Son, the image of the invisible God. Or as we read in John's Gospel, the Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. We have seen his glory and the glory of the one and only who came from the Father, full of grace and truth. John testifies concerning him. He cries out saying, this was he of whom I said, he who comes after me has surpassed me because he was before me. For the fullness of his grace we have all received, one blessing after another. For the law was given through Moses. Grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. No one has ever seen God, but God, the one and only, who is at the Father's side, has made him known. Back to that part of being not seen, part of the invisibility. We said before that if God did walk this earth, doing this miracle and that miracle, bringing about inhumane regimes, giving out teaching here and there, helping others in the direction of their lives, that's what Jesus did. He may not have directly brought down inhumane regimes, but he planted the seeds so that they could be brought down. Jesus was on this earth for around 30 years as the image of the invisible God. Doesn't mean that he was a picture of God, the likeness of God in human form, you know, that God looked like him. He was doing the work of God. Passage in 1 Colossians 1 goes on to talk about the work that Jesus had in creation over all the earth. He was the utmost in all things. And also he reconciles us human beings to God and to one another. That was his work. And he shows us the work of God. But what did human beings do to Jesus? Some followed him and hung on his every word. You can read the Gospels and seek those things out. Some came with questions, but the answers they received meant they turned away from him. They didn't want to follow him. Some plotted his downfall. The end result, death on a cross. However, they didn't know that that was all part of the plan anyway. The plan of salvation. Without the death of Jesus on the cross, we can't even begin to know the invisible God. Jesus was God incarnate. God come to earth. Emmanuel, God with us. He was rejected, and as he hung across on the cross, he was taunted. He saves others, let him save himself if he's Christ of God, the chosen one. If you're the King of the Jews, save yourself. You're going to destroy the temple, you said, and build it back up again in 3 days. Save yourself. Come down from the cross. If you're the Son of God. He saved others. He can't save himself. He's the King of Israel. Let him come down now from the cross and we'll believe in him. He trusts in God. Let God rescue him now if he wants him. If he said, I am the Son of God. Even if Jesus had come down off that cross, some would have said it was just a trick. We're still not going to follow him. We're still not going to believe in him. We're still going to reject him. We have an invisible God. This can be a problem. Somebody says, give me a proof that there's God. That's not easy. In some respects, there are philosophical arguments. I know of at least 10. But then one philosopher said, just because you have one leaky bucket, it doesn't make it any better if you've got 10 leaky buckets. That's if you don't believe the philosophical arguments. There are theological arguments about God given in the Bible. The Bible assumes that God is always there. That's one of its basic assumptions. There's also the relational arguments. And most of the time for me, I find the relational ones the best. It's when we talk together. God, myself. But to have that relationship, in effect we have to take the plunge. Reading the Bible, trying to sort it all out intellectually and logical and with reason takes you so far, but there has to be the act of giving oneself totally and utterly to God, to to want to follow him. At times, though, it's not easy. And I admit, for me personally, there are times I don't feel that God is close to me. But I know he's there. Why? Because then I switch over personally to the theological arguments, to the Bible, where it says God will never leave you nor forsake you. God is always there. And then that leads me back to the relational side with God. We follow an invisible God. But would it be better if he were visible? Would more people follow him? I'm not so sure. We can see the work of God, primarily in Jesus Christ, the greatest miracle that there ever has been, his death and his resurrection. He was the image of the invisible God. That's how God behaves, how he works. If you don't know this invisible God, then you think, well, Richard's just talking out of his imagination. Or perhaps he's deluded. There isn't really a God there. But maybe you might want to talk with somebody after the service, Amuta, myself, or a friend you know who knows God and this relational side. Don't wait. There will be people over here who will be prepared to pray with you and to pray for you. And maybe then working towards some real answers. Yes, we have an invisible God, but a God who is very different to us, but he's also very close and wants to become even closer. Let's pray. Perhaps in a moment of quiet, if you don't know God and you would like to, and just take a few moments to ask God to come into your life, to ask him to show you that yes, he is there. May not be immediate. Maybe it will come in time. Ask God to have that relationship with you and be open to having that relationship. We've heard already this morning about one way is to have that prayer as you're going to work. A conversation with God. Talk to him and allow time for him to talk to you. Just take a few moments to pray.